Those were the days, my friend, we thought they'd never end. That's right, I'm here with the Vintager. I found that old recording, I don't even think you've heard it, Jeff, by Bing Crosby singing Those Were the Days.
The one for Carol O'Connor?
This is Those Were the Days, my friend, we thought they'd never end.
Oh, good. Yes. Good recording.
Yes, and I thought we might use that as our intro here. So we're here at Sharp Facets Gallery. We just talked to Bruce Katz, and now the Vintager is here. And How Do You Know That is the name of this segment. How do you know whether something is sterling silver or silver plate? Do you know by looking at it what it is? Well, nobody can really tell just by looking at it. You have to know. Another interesting fact is that this week is National Estate Planning Awareness Week. Did you know that, Jeff?
Didn't know it until you brought a paper in that said that.
There you go. I've got the paper. It must be if I've got a piece of paper. But, you know, a lot of people bring us items in that they think are sterling silver. They're sure they're sterling silver. How do you know, Vintager?
Well, I do know that when they come in the door, that the great probability is that they're not going to be, no matter what grandma says.
Oh, come on, Jeff. Don't dash everybody's hopes.
Well, grandmothers have a... Grandmother gave me this silver. Well, grandmother may have stretched it just a little bit.
Right. And, of course, you know, if it was silver-colored, a lot of people thought it was silver.
Well, anything that was bright and white and silver-colored, they said was silver.
That's right. So, to begin this segment, how do we figure out whether something is sterling, whether it's silver plate, what kind of value it could potentially have? How do you know?
Well, let's just start off with determining what it is. Basically, silver is a non-ferrous metal, so that means that if you're separating out silver, one of the things that you can use is a heavy magnet.
Just a regular magnet, though.
No, a regular magnet will cost you money, and that you'll miss things.
Okay.
If you're buying silver, you want a earth magnet, which is usually 25 to 50 pounds pull. And I don't tell you, you put it the wrong place. By gosh, you can tell real quick that you have something that's not silver. And if you're a lightweight person, this don't take some effort to dislodge that magnet from the thing that you're testing. But that's it. First place.
Haven't we had episodes where you've had your keys in your pockets and the magnet has grabbed hold of the keys through your pocket?
My best episode was walking by a restaurant table and getting too close and pulling the silverware off the table. It was stuck to the side of my leg because I had the magnet in my pocket.
So what we're trying to say is this is a really heavy-duty magnet. I mean, we have them. They get stuck to things, and it's very difficult to separate them.
So every day.
Yeah. So how do you use a magnet as a tester?
Well, you actually test the object to the magnet. If it has any pull whatsoever, it's not going to be sterling silver.
Okay.
Now, there are things that have a low pull to them, but those are copper with silver over the top. Copper is basically a non-ferrous metal, too. But the hardened copper, they mix it with tin. And tin is very magnetic. So we can pull with a magnet most things that are silver-plated copper.
Well, that's one way to tell, but another way is to, most things are stamped, aren't they?
Most things are stamped. The great majority are stamped. Stamping actually started in Egyptian times.
That's going to pretty much cover everything then, I would think.
That pretty much covers everything, and we're basically an English people.
Right.
Or Northern European, and those societies started stamping for collection of collection of taxes and tithings, mm-hmm. and that started back in the 400 A.D.
That was a long time ago, Jeff.
Oh, the Romans had it even before then, so you know you had another 600 years that the Romans stamped everything. And one of the first things that people did to establish a monetary capability was develop the ability to test the grade of silver in a coin.
Now, silver coins are different than sterling silver.
Silver coins are slightly, in the U.S., they're slightly less silver in them than sterling silver. Silver coins have 900 parts silver. Sterling silver is 925.
And quite frankly, quite often you see 925 on an item, and that means that it should be sterling silver.
That should be sterling silver. Unfortunately,
there are unscrupulous people amongst us.
Yes.
Sorry.
And the easiest way to tell that, have we ever bought something that was stamped all over 925 and
yes.
sterling and come to find out that we should have tested it even more?
Yes.
And have we bought something that was still had the store's tags on it?
Yes.
And had the 925 and sterling stamped all over it, and we found that we should have tested it more? I mean, it does happen, and we buy large quantities of things at times, and there's pieces that slip through, but not often.
Not often. So when you're looking at things that have what they call hallmarks on them.
Well, the hallmarks tell a history of it.
Mm-hmm.
It tells who made it, what country it was made, what's the purity of the product, and it also usually gives you the time that it was made in.
Mm-hmm. And there's actually books that describe all this, right?
There are books that describe all this, and we have a lot of out-of-print books that we use for resource, and it is a historical lesson in the opulence of silver. Silver reached its heyday of usage in upper-income housing from 1870 to 1915. You know why?
Why?
Why 1870?
I don't know 1870.
Well, Carson City, you know, remember the bonanza of TV fame?
Yes.
All those places came into effect because they had discovered large silver deposits.
Wow.
And almost overnight, silver coinage, always was popular,
right,
became even more popular. The so-called cartwheels, which were the silver dollars, became the number one mint-issued item.
Wait a minute. What was their name on Bonanza? Cartwright.
How about that?
Just thought of that. Okay.
Yes, and it was Carson City in the 1870s, 1880s. Well, any place that usually produces gold also as a byproduct produces silver. But more importantly, the large copper mines came into effect. The Anaconda mines throughout Utah and Colorado were developed, and a byproduct of processing copper is silver. Yeah, it's found in conjunction with copper, by and large. And at times, it made copper smelting profitable. And the copper became a low-cost item, and that enabled for us to develop electrical wiring.
Wow.
Cheap and effective. There's nothing that just stands alone.
You're right, and I think that's one of the things that we would like, that everything stands alone. You know, this is a real pretty little breakfast set right here.
Well, that breakfast set is called,
yes,
gosh,
Jeff? Okay.
I have tongue-tied.
Okay.
It's called Modern.
Modern.
It's the epitome of Art Deco. It's got the bullet shaped. It's got all the rounded surfaces. It's got the accent lines on it. And then in a concession to the older times, it's got the side engravings.
That's really, really pretty. That's a piece that lives here at Sharp Facets Gallery.
That lives here. And that one actually is silver plate. Now, we kept that because who made it, and also for the classic design. Mid-century modern has become very popular, and that's like the epitome of mid-century modern.
I tell you, the other thing that's really neat about this, since we've done some work with the Railroad Museum, although this is not a railroad tea set, it has some of the elements of being a flat, heavy bottom to it. Okay.
Well, yes, okay. Speaking of fat, heavy bottoms.
Flat,
okay. Flat, oh, sorry. Okay.
The hearing gets him every once in a while, folks. Okay, go ahead.
We had three things that were developed at the time for using silverware. There was the household silver,
right,
which was quite prevalent, especially in the upper income. And you actually had to be pretty poor not to have a tea service that was at least silver plate, for you had that, and that was of a particular design usually, and it usually had footed designs. Then you had silver that was utilitarian for hotels, railroads. That was of another type of design, and design there was so that you could put it on a tray and it wouldn't slide off, and people could bump it on a table and not turn it over, so it was a flat bottom design.
Also, didn't they use like quadruple plate or something for restaurant qualities because it had to be heavier duty than what you needed for the home?
It was always heavier duty. The silver plate for restaurants and things was usually 2.5 times the normal thickness of application of silver as household.
Now, that brings up another question. So does that have more value as far as buying? Is that something you're interested in buying or not?
We buy it because of the uniqueness of design, because usually the quadruple silver plate was the very top end of silver plate and had a unique design, such as this large bowl that's right in front of me.
Mm-hmm. This is a pretty piece.
That's a compote bowl that was actually made in the 1930s.
Mm-hmm.
It has all the elements of the modern design again, but it also has a throwback.
The border around it?
The border around it. The fancy embossed border around it is a concession to the previous styling. Now, the third thing of silver, of course, was the elegant presentation silver.
Okay.
Now, presentation silver is what Tiffany made its bones on.
Okay.
Presentation silver would be something like a large trophy. The America's Cup is one of the most classic ones. The silver services that were in the wardrobe of battleships, or any literally ship in the Navy, it had its own silver service to serve at the Admiral's table.
Wow.
And they were all super sought after. This presentation silver, if you were a general and made general, you got a presentation silver usually from your staff. If you retired, you got presentation silver. If you worked for a large company, you got presentation silver. It was de rigueur for a fine gift.
Now, that was silver plate, though, still.
No.
Sterling?
That was sterling silver, mostly.
Oh, okay.
Now, you know, the M.S. Rowe in New Orleans had an auction recently, and silver from the battleship Pennsylvania brought over $300,000.
And that was sterling?
Sterling.
Wow. So if somebody is sitting at home and they look at some of these pieces, are most pieces marked sterling, or are there certain brands?
Most U.S. pieces are marked sterling. Okay. English pieces will have the lion passant, which is one paw up. If you got two paws up off the ground, that's silver plate. And
one
silver
paw.
Plate started in England and then came to the Americas.
Okay. So, and are there any, we see a lot of Rogers, and a lot of people, it doesn't say whether it's silver plate or not, but Rogers.
Rogers, like 95% of Rogers' production was silver plate. And if it hadn't been from the railroad's expansion, Rogers would have done nothing. There's two factors that made put Rogers almost in every household. And one was the railroad expansion, and the other was Sears and Roebuck.
I knew you were going to bring up Sears and Roebuck. You always do.
Sears and Roebuck was the number one seller of silver plate jewelry all the way up through the 60s.
Silver plate jewelry and silverware.
And silverware. I meant to say silverware. Right. Flatware, hollowware, silver plate. They were the number one seller all the way up through the 1960s.
Now, if somebody is sitting at home and they have grandma's silver, or their parents are getting ready to downsize and everything, it seems today that a lot of people just don't want the sterling silver that mom or dad or grandparents had.
Well, I'm sure you can remember the woman that threw all of her mother's out in the dumpster because it was black.
Ooh.
Oh,
ooh.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we all pitched in and dug through a darn dumpster for about 2 hours pulling out $13,000-$14,000 worth of silver.
Yes, but whoa, not all silver is worth that kind of price, even as sterling.
No, it's not.
But.
Let's make the assumption all the time that it is.
Okay.
It only takes a few minutes to bring a piece in for me to look at it and give you definitive knowledge that it is or is not.
And you don't have to bring the whole set. You can simply bring a piece or two. You can bring in how many pieces that there are in a set. And Jeff can give you a price if you're interested in selling it. It's a great way to go, but you don't have to bring the whole set in.
No. And the other thing that we have is the fact that silver was used in a lot of other things other than flatware and hollowware for table. Mm-hmm. It was used, for instance, and this is a glove box here.
Mm-hmm.
For a presentation, that was beautiful. Now, they made those in silver. They made them in something called nickel silver, and they made them in silver plate. So you had three price points that you could buy that in.
Absolutely.
And all three of them sitting side by side look identical.
Well, that's like we wanted to actually discuss these two ladles here. What are they? You know, do they look just the same, don't they? Yes, I think they do. There's maybe a little difference in the style. Which is which?
Well, one is made by a famous artisan that actually did a lot of his work right out of Charleston. And the other one was made for sale through catalog sales, and it was sold by the tens of thousands.
Can you tell which one is the most expensive one? That's what I want you to tell me. Can you tell, if you're watching, or if when you go back, the one with all the chase design, and by the way, you're listening to WCRS right here in Greenwood, and the nice bowl to it is sterling silver. This one was actually made between 1828 and 1887. It's about a $900 piece of silver, isn't it, Jeff?
For the collectability, I mean, that is a heritage piece.
Now, the other one, tell us about this one.
The other one, the style and pattern was designed by, that's a Revere design, Paul okay. Revere's shop, or actually his father's shop or his brother's shop. He came up with the design, and then it was licensed through the years. And that one is a heavy silver plate.
Mm-hmm.
It's called community silver.
So you're most likely going to see one of these if you are dealing with a punch bowl Or a plexiglass one, if we would be so gauche. A plexiglass one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, I tell you what, let's have a quick break. Let's take a 2-minute break there, Andy. We want to come back and finish up the show and tell you how you know. What do you know? How do you know what you got? We'll be right back.
Gold. Gold. More precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. Those were the days when we had 20 utensils on the table when people sat down to eat, and it was a question which item you picked up to eat with, wasn't it? That was one of the questions that was always. Now, every day, it's just the fork, the knife, and the spoon. That'll do it. But there is actually books and books. This is one right here about silver flatware dictionary. And Jeff wants to talk a little bit about spoons. This one shows a picture of all the different types of spoons. And there's more pictures. I just picked out one just to show you. And then, of course, the vintager himself, the one and only Jeff Eller, sitting right here beside me, is going to talk about some of the different spoons and what they all were used for.
Well, in the Victorian times, with the heyday of fine silver, there were over 108 different spoon applications.
They were a little overzealous, weren't they?
Well, there were spoons for grapefruit. There were spoons for pudding. There were spoons for salt. There were spoons for coffee. There was particular spoons for tea. There were spoons for particular sauces. There were spoons for mustard.
You had to be really well educated to eat, didn't you?
Well, if you went to work for somebody as a maid,
yes.
One of the first things you learned was the category of dinnerware.
Wow.
You were gauche if you could not present the proper spoon to the proper application.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
And one of the things that we're working with always is somebody that brings one in is sure it's a tea strainer or something, when it, oftentimes it could be anything from a medicine dispensing spoon with a strainer to it, to an orange slice spoon for the season your coffee with. I mean, there are spoons, and then there are
There's lots of real spoons. Pierced spoons for serving and whatnot. This one, of course, to pierced, and olive spoons to be able to pick up the olive.
Yes. Emerald's got the olive spoon. The spoon that you had was for peas.
For peas.
Yes. Everybody looks at that and say, well, that's a tea strainer. Oh, no. That's for peas, English peas. People don't realize that one of the things that people brought with them from England when they came here, for instance, when the Irish started showing up in the 1840s from the famine and things, the number one thing of value they brought with them was a set of silver spoons.
To eat their potatoes with?
No, you didn't say that. No.
I couldn't help it, Jeff. I'm sorry. Why did they bring spoons, just out of curiosity?
Well, number one, you can nest them. They don't take up much room. Number two, they were usually a heritage-type thing, so you had some sentimentality attached to them. And three, of course, they had intrinsic value. And the relationship between the metal value and the value of the utility of the spoon was a much higher ratio than it is today. I'll put it in comparison. An average spoon today has about $25 worth of silver in it. So you would think that it would sell for maybe about $80 new. Mm-hmm. if we're using the same relationship as the Irish spoons, if it was $25 then, it would have sold for $250 new.
Wow. Wow. And, you know, silver craftsmanship was an art.
It still is. It just has been taken over by automated machinery. It used to be the mold makers or the planchet makers, which is actually the mold that a hydraulic press punches out the spoons in. That was one of the highest priced pieces of labor that a company could hire.
I think one of the other things that's real interesting, in today's market, they have pared down and as far as the number of silver patterns that you can even buy. In fact, can you still buy sterling silver flatware?
Oh, absolutely. It's sold, but what's happened is that the American public has changed. It changed dramatically in 1980. When silver went way up,
yeah.
People were left with the silver-plated stuff, basically.
Right.
And a lot came off the market in 1980.
Yeah.
And then in 2009, 10, 11, silver went way up again, and even more came off the market. And the brides of the time just didn't have inclination to have anything they had to work on.
Like polish.
Right.
Like polish. So a lot of times today we're seeing a lot of silver come right here to Sharp Facets Gallery. As people can always divide money, if they can't divide anything else, they can divide money. So we see a lot of sterling silver brought here. You are very good at valuing it for people and helping people decide. I'll tell you the other thing that I think is very interesting is even if you don't have a whole set of sterling silver flatware, it's really nice to have a pretty piece to set on the table at Christmas time to dish up the mashed potatoes or dish up certain things. It really is a nice, nice gift. And we have all kinds of pieces right here at Sharp Facets Gallery.
The serving pieces have held their popularity. Mm-hmm. It's kind of unusual, but that's what has held the popularity. And people with silver, I much rather deal with them when they're alive than deal with the granddaughter that, you know, grandma not died on a Friday, and here I am on a Wednesday to sell the silver.
Right.
So yeah. I'd much, much rather to have some prep.
That's right. So even if you're not selling now, if you're trying to determine value, if you're trying to make a plan on what to do futuristically, one of the things the vintager does, he works with people in their estates and helps them decide who should maybe get what by value, what would be good to keep, what would be good maybe to let go of, and to make a plan. Because when you're trying to settle an estate, I don't know how many people you've talked to that it was all just, I'll use the word, dumped in their lap, and they really didn't know what to do.
It was chaos.
Yeah.
And how many have we seen that actually did throw away good stuff because they were ignorant of the fact that sterling silver will turn black?
And by the way, if you're bringing it to us, you do not need to polish it. All you have to do is bring it in. We can look at it and ascertain whether it is sterling or not. Couple of final roundup points. How can you tell if something is sterling, possibly, or plate when you're looking at pieces of flatware, tea sets?
On the bottom, in the United States, we stamp everything usually on the bottom. And somewhere on the bottom of that particular piece or on the bottom of that particular tray will be a stamping or an etching that will have the designation of what it is there. It may not spell it out silver plate, but it will have initials like ESPN.
No, EPNS.
EPNS. EPNS, electroplated nickel silver, which was
go.
The most common one for the last 30, 40 years. But it'll have it on the bottom. And if it's sterling, it's always going to have 925 or sterling stamped on the bottom.
And if it's Rogers, most of the time, F.B. Rogers?
Right.
It's usually silver plate. Very rarely did they make some did they make some in sterling.
Right.
But there was a little bit made.
Right.
There was. Okay, well, listen, everybody, I hope you've enjoyed the show here today. This has been How Do You Know segment here. We're going to do it on some different things from gold and et cetera. So you got to stay tuned. Every Wednesday afternoon, we try to bring you the Vintager and his sidekick, Ann, right here on the radio. Hey, by the way, we're going to do a little video after the show here. We're going to be giving away this week some loops to help you identify what you have. So we'll give away, I guess, two, maybe three loops. You'll be able to register on Facebook. So look for that video. It'll be coming up very soon. Everybody have a great afternoon. We'll look forward to being with you tomorrow morning. And as always, thanks for tuning in to WCRS right here in Greenwood. Hey, Jeff, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Very enjoyable, Ann.
All right, that's the Vintager. Those were the days, my friend. We thought they'd never end. Boy, were we wrong. Bye-bye, everybody.